Answering your tough financial questions for the past 21 years, it's Hanson McLean's Money Matters with co-hosts Scott Hanson and Pat McLean. Would you like an opinion on a financial matter you're dealing with? Whether it is about retirement, investments, taxes, or 401ks, Scott Hanson and Pat McLean would like to help you by answering your call. To join Hanson McLean's Money Matters, call now at 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON.
Welcome to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
I'm Pat McLean.
Glad you are with us today as we talk about financial matters, retirement issues. Both myself and my co-host here, Pat, we're both financial advisors, certified financial planners, chartered financial consultants. We spend our weekdays with people like yourself, and we come here on the weekends to be your financial advisors on the air. At least the show comes to you on the weekends to be your financial advisors on the air.
I don't quite understand the distinction.
Well, I don't want to mislead to make it sound like I'm always sitting in the studio.
Oh, okay.
On a Saturday.
Yes.
Because sometimes
the show is here almost every Saturday.
Every Saturday.
Have
you been listening to the program for a while? Okay, so if you've been a listener to Hanson McLean's Money Matters for a while, we do lots of calls, talk about things. So early on in the show life, I don't know why this came up to me right now, but I'm going to give a little side note before we even start the program. We've been doing the program for 23 years.
Mm-hmm.
And the first Christmas, so we had, when we first started the show, we hired a consultant, a coach that we'd meet with once a week.
That kind of taught us how to talk on the radio. And obviously, you're thinking, that wasn't very well spent. That was money that was kind of wasted.
We tried a few things.
Yes.
That Christmas.
The first Christmas on the air.
Yes, the first Christmas on the air. I don't know if we ran Christmas Eve or Christmas, but Pat interviewed Santa Claus.
About his financial situation.
Yes, about his financial situation. And I'm glad Jasmine, our producer, is laughing.
I'm glad that was lost. That tape is long gone. But that was a recommendation from the...
That was, wasn't it?
Yeah.
In any case, I think the show's matured a bit over the years.
Yes.
And we have
Every Saturday with the exception of any major holidays.
And in which case we're not interviewing Santa.
Yes. But we're not going to run our... If Christmas were to fall on a Saturday, I'm not going... Or Easter would always be on a Sunday. We run sometimes.
Easter, yeah. We're on Easter.
Yeah. Okay.
Which is not quite the same as Christmas.
Yes.
And if you're mentioning the two major Christian holidays, perhaps you should be mentioning some other religious holidays as well to be politically correct in this day and age.
Okay.
Okay.
I'll get to that next.
Anyway, this is a financial program. Our goal here is to help people make wise choices as they approach the retirement years. We understand that not everyone wants to be retired. If we look at the stats, and we have many clients.
Scott, I'm going to go back for a second because that sounded insulting to non-Christians. I will recognize any that I am aware of non-Christian holidays.
Yeah, you meant no offense there.
That is correct.
Yeah,
I'm just ignorant about many of the other religion holidays. So no offense.
Man. Yeah.
I apologize offended you.
We definitely do not and want to offend in any way. Back to my point on retirement. We understand not everyone wants to retire, at least the traditional retirement. We believe it's important that people are in a position where work is an option and not an obligation, where people are in a position financially so that they have more choices in their life. And part of with good financial planning, it's not necessarily about getting super rich, because for most people...
They're not going to get super rich.
That's just not going to happen. They're not going to ever be...
It's getting to it a peace of mind with your money.
Well, being in a point where you now have some options in life.
Yeah. Well, not only that.
And that's where it becomes a little more powerful.
It isn't the, you know, so the studies show it isn't the amount of money that actually people focus on. It's whether they actually have enough money to maintain their current standard of living in retirement. It's not to increase their standard of living. It's that they can maintain their same standard of living without running out of money. That is the number one concern of a retiree after health and yes. healthcare.
So our objective when working both with this radio program and working with our clients at Hanson McLean is just making sure that people get to that point in life where they could not work and receive income. Not because we want everyone to quit their job because we think everyone should just take a life of leisure. We don't mean that by any means. But to be in that position, it is a freeing.
It's empowering.
Yes. It's empowering. And it gives people options. And we've seen people make career choices that they've been stuck in a career that they can't stand. They get to a point where they have some financial independence. They go and take on new careers, the latter part of their life, things, and they flourish sometimes in these new careers. How many times have you seen that?
Oh, often. Often, where people actually, at a stage in life, feel financially comfortable enough to pursue their passions for...
I met with someone this week. Now, I'm a financial advisor, as you are as well, Pat. I haven't taken on a new client in 15 or so years. We've got 100 and some employees. There's a lot of other things going on. But I still have a handful of relationships from years back. And I met with this couple. She'd retired 21 years ago. 22 years ago.
Wow.
She retired 22 years ago. I was her financial advisor. Was off work for 6 months, maybe. Went back to work for several years. Was off for about a year. Went back for work. To work. Now she just got her. She just told me she celebrated 15 years with her this other employer that she and she's 71.
And
now.
She likes the
71 is now retiring
because she liked the job.
Did not need the money in the slightest.
Yeah,
wasn't about the money.
Not at all.
Nope, at all. Wasn't about it at all. She enjoyed the
which is a nice place to be.
But having that financial security where she knew she could quit in any time she wanted was also extremely powerful.
Makes it a little easier.
Yeah. Anyway, if you want to be a part of our program, you've got a question for us here at Hanson McLean. We'd love to take your call, answer your question. To join Hanson McLean's Money Matters, 1-888-2-HANSON is our number here. That's 1-888-2-HANSON. Numerically, it's 1-888-242-6766. We are in Dallas, Texas with Myra. Myra, you're with Hanson McLean.
All right. So my problem is I don't know if I need to have bonds in our portfolio.
Okay.
So we have about $5 million, $2.3 million are in rental properties, of which I have $600,000 of loans. We have $2.2 million in the stock market. About 50% large cap, 25% international, and 25% small cap, but we have no bonds at all. So we have our house, about $600,000 is paid for, and a couple hundred thousand in college funds. I'm just wondering, do we need bonds?
Well, here's why someone has bonds in a portfolio. Two primary reasons. One is for money to draw upon to provide income when other assets are down in value. So people have bonds. For example, someone's retired. They'll keep some money in bonds. They'll be taking an income perhaps from their bond portfolio. The stock market goes through a big downturn. No need to worry. They're just going to live off their bonds until the stock market recovers. That's one reason. The second reason people have bonds is if they just can't stand the ups and downs of the market, it freaks them out too much, and they want to smooth out their portfolio.
So, Myra, how old are you?
I'm 48, and my husband's 53.
And what's your approximate income?
53 or 63?
53. Okay. 53. I'm 48, and he's 53. We make about $500,000 a year and another $150,000 on our rental properties.
Okay.
It's about 10 rentals. We gross $150,000, and we net about $70,000.
Okay.
So we have, we can say like a guaranteed income of $70,000 a year. So.
And how much of that $500,000 are you saving every year in of your income?
$200,000.
You're saving $200,000.
Yes, we save $200,000, and about. But a big chunk of the money we spend is on the kids.
Mm-hmm.
$50,000 is on the kids, and mm-hmm. the kids are one is going to go to college in a year, mm-hmm. and one is 4 more years of high school, private
mm-hmm.
high school.
Mm-hmm. So,
What brought you to the point where you're asking this question?
Yeah, that's actually a great question, Scott. Why are you asking the question?
Because we're thinking our older son goes to college in a year. Then our younger one goes to college in 4 years. We want to retire. So we're thinking, can we retire in 4 to 5 years with zero bonds?
Two stories I want to share with you. One, this is back in 1999. It was a friend of mine and a neighbor of mine, not a client. His daughter was a babysitter for us. That's how we got to know them, right? Nice family. Mm-hmm. And he came to me and said, Scott, I've got money set aside for my daughter's college. It's all in stocks. This was in 1999, right? What do you think I should do?
Mm-hmm.
She's going to college. She's a mm-hmm. senior in high school. I said, I would sell all the stocks and have it in cash.
So that you know the outcome.
So you know the outcome. Now, it just so happened that the next year is when the market started falling apart.
And you appeared genius.
All right. Second story.
It was bound to happen.
My own children. My oldest daughter just graduated college. Now she's on to grad school, which I didn't save enough for grad school. My son is halfway through college. I have 529 plans for them. I went to cash with their accounts about 3 years ago. Different timing with them, based upon when I would need the money. Now I could look back and say, well, that was foolish, Scott, because the stock market went up. And I missed out on some of the increases that I could have received over that time. But I don't know what the future is. But what we try to do is base things on timelines. When are those dollars needed? And kind of a good rule of thumb, this isn't always the case, but a good rule of thumb, any money that's needed within 5 years should not be tied to things that fluctuate in value, stocks or real estate for that matter, within 5 years. Because things go through cycles. And if we go back over history, stocks have gone down, real estate's gone down, other things have gone down. And I don't want to be in a position, nor do I want any of our clients to be in a position where that the money's needed and suddenly the value's way down.
And so you mentioned a retirement date. How many years in the future do you want this retirement date to be?
I'm sorry, I didn't get the question.
How many days in the future? How many years in the future do you want to retire? When do you want to retire? How many
years?
5 years.
5 years, yes.
And what does the interest rate look like on those loans on the homes?
Like under 4.5% for a lot of them. We have $600,000 of loans right now.
Is your goal to have those paid off by the time you retire?
Not really, no, because what we're thinking is we're going to cash flow our son's college. That's going to be $70,000 a year. And so the other $100,000 or the other $80,000 is going towards retirement anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So we're not going to be able to save a lot starting next year.
Got it. So
we're going to, yeah.
Wait, no, so you're retired. Where's your income come from? You just said you're not going to be able to save much going forward because you're going to pay for your kids' college. Where's your income going to come from?
So here's what we're thinking. My younger son's college will be provided for with a 529.
Yep.
So we're probably going to have $300,000 by the time he goes to college. So that's going to be taken care of. Then our rentals net us about $70,000 right now.
Mm-hmm.
So if I take out another $50,000 a year from our retirement accounts, because my husband will be around 59 and a half at that point, maybe,
mm-hmm.
because he's turning 54 this year.
Mm-hmm.
Then it should be enough.
Okay, so I see where you're going with this. So here's a couple of things that I would look to do. One is I wouldn't save $200,000 in that 529 college fund for the last child. Just because you don't know if you're going to spend all $200,000 on the last child. So I would actually, rather than, where you said pay 100% of the cost.
Yeah, you don't know. Actually, with my daughter, we didn't spend all of her money.
And then you moved it to your...
My son went to a different story. But
yeah, but you can move it downstream, yeah. Right? You can move the beneficiaries on the 529 plan, but since you have two children, there's only so far you mm-hmm. can move it. After that, then if you pull the money out, you're going to have to pay taxes and penalties on it. So on the 529s, mm-hmm. I'd use half of that 529 for the first child. I think you should have bonds in the portfolio based upon what you said, or you mm-hmm. pay down debt, or you do a combination of the
or
two.
Or you have some money just in cash and CDs.
But
so we have $100,000 in cash right
okay.
now.
That's but
yeah, it's a little bit too low.
Yeah, it's too low. So the answer to your question is based upon what you told us is you should have bonds in the portfolio right now.
Here's a way to look at it. And when you really would be well served to meet with a qualified financial planner to help you kind of go through these numbers, but determine what are your cash needs over the next 5 years. That's going to give you kind of a bogey of what you should have in bonds, because what happens if
but
something
Scott,
else gets derailed?
But so that's why I said pay down the loans and bonds, because she said she has loans in her portfolio that 600,000 that are 4.5% that cost 4.5% for
yeah,
the money.
Yeah, do that before you buy bonds.
You want to pay down that anything above 3.25% interest rate on those properties. You probably want to pay down before you start buying bonds.
Particularly if you're planning on retiring.
Okay.
If you can get those paid down some.
Yeah. So anything lower than 3.25%, I'd probably go to the bond market and see if I could get something higher yielding. But anything above 3.25%, you want to pay those down, because you're not going to get that high of a yield on a similar risk bond by investing. So you do need bonds in the portfolio. But remember, those loans that you own those properties are secured. Mm-hmm. They're bonds. Someone else lent you that money in the form of a bond. So the question is, am I better off putting money into my own bond or paying off a loan, which is a bond that you owe on in advance? And the answer is yes, probably, maybe, which is you have to look at each one of those individual loans that you owe and what that cost of money is versus what you're going to get in the marketplace. But the answer to the question is, that you started with, do you need bonds in the portfolio? At this stage of the game, if you're planning on retiring in approximately 5 years, absolutely.
I would have some.
You absolutely have some.
So we have $2.2 million in our retirement account.
I'm with you.
How much of that $2.2 would you put in bonds?
So I don't believe that I would actually put anything into bonds. I would start building my bond portion of the portfolio right now. So I wouldn't buy any more equities. Scott may disagree with that. I might.
Yeah, but she says she's not going to be able to save much anymore from here.
Well, that's because they were planning on funding the kids' education 100%. I might take $200,000, maybe $300,000 of that $2.2 million and put it in short-term bonds right now.
I mean, that $2.2 million could easily fall to $1.2 million.
And then you wouldn't be talking about retiring in 5 years. But if you had $2.2 million or $2 million in equities... And you had.
I think this close, I would not. I would never recommend more than 80% equities. Someone this close to retirement, 5 years, regardless of your age.
All right, so you're talking.
Yeah, I mean, really, if I sit back and think about it,
you're talking about.
If you came in to see me, I would not recommend 100%.
I'm going to give you that. I'm thinking 5 years out, but
long term, if you go 20 years, you're better off in stocks. No question about
it. Yes. So the answer to the question, yes, you need bonds.
How important is that retirement?
I'd pay down. I'm going to push it a little. I said $300,000 in bonds. I might go $400,000 or $500,000 in bonds out of that $2.2 million, and then I'd put a plan together to actually add more bonds to the portfolio and pay down any
and
of the loans
does,
greater
what
than
3.25. That provides cash there, so that your retirement's a certainty, regardless of what financial cycle we're in.
That's the only reason you have it.
And if that retirement date is not that big of a deal, if it's like, well, if things go south for a while, we'll just work a little longer, then you wouldn't need as much in bonds. But that's the only reason it would be there. It's so that the day, if suddenly you've got this plan in place and all of a sudden you go to retire and it happens to be another major downturn in the market, which will happen again, we just don't know when, suddenly if you don't have any money outside of stocks, where are you going to get your income?
And the idea is, Scott started this call with is, and the reason you have money in bonds is so that the rest of the portfolio can weather the ups and downs in the market.
And I actually like, if you can work on getting those loans paid off in the rentals, I mean, because you're talking about early retirement, right? If you can get those things paid off, that's just all the more cash that comes in.
That's all it is. That's all it is.
It's a way to reduce risk and have more capital.
Yeah, a lot of our loans are on 15-year notes, and we bought a lot of our houses 5 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So by the time we retire, we will have like 5 years, 4 years left on those notes.
Understand.
So it's not like they're a 30-year net. Yeah.
Understand, but cost of money. Anything work, above 3.25%, you want to pay down.
That,
put more bond in the portfolio.
The payments are the payments. You can't. So I would pick one and try to work some of those down to get at least a couple paid off early, and that would free up that payment. And money going out is this, you know.
Money not going out is the same as money coming in.
Thank you.
So, and get the portfolio about 80% equities and 20% bonds now.
Yeah. Appreciate the call, Myra. Wish you, and you guys have obviously done a great job in saving.
Savers. Yeah. Great savers.
We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back.
Are you a sports fan? Each year, teams spend the preseason getting ready for their big opening game. Well, retirement's a little like that. The difference is that instead of a yearly preseason, you spend your career getting your finances in shape for a retirement that could last 25 years or more. Think of Hanson McLean as the coach that gets you ready for your retirement season. For a free retirement readiness consultation, visit us at HansonMcLean.com today.
Welcome back to Hanson McLean's Money Matters, 1-888-2-HANSON to join us. Let's talk to Robert.
Hi, good afternoon, gentlemen.
Hi, Robert.
I wanted to find out what I should do with a variable annuity I have. I started this about 20 years ago, and I've seen the ups and downs. You know, I've been through 2007 and 2008, and it went down over half what it was worth, and then now it's mainly it's at its highs now. So anyway, I've been thinking about what to do with it. I don't really need income from it. I was thinking of just eventually just forwarding it to my kids.
How old are you?
I'm 66 now, so that's why I'm getting close to retirement, maybe about 4 years. And anyway, it's worth like 270-something thousand, but my monthly, if I annuitize it, it'll be only like $1,400 a month.
Is it inside an IRA or outside an IRA?
It's outside an IRA. It's I have it in a variable annuity, so it's in a fairly aggressive portfolio.
And what was your cost basis in it? How much money have you put in either at one time or over the years?
Oh, yeah. I started with a bulk amount. So the amount that I had put in was 106. So it's worth 272. And that's over about a 25-year period.
Got it.
So here's the thing. Here are your options. One option is you can just leave it where it is and let it continue to grow, and you're going to retire in 4 years, and let's presume it's going to have some additional growth, and it could take some additional provide some additional income. Two, you can start taking some with just a withdrawal without annuitizing it.
But you don't need income right now, is that correct?
No, I don't. I think I have enough for my pension and my Social Security and IRAs. I have quite a bit of IRA that I will have to start taking it at 70 and a half. So that's why I'm planning to retire at 70, because it's going to be mandatory.
So the thing about these annuities, back in the day you thought, oh, this will be good because they have good tax deferred growth. I don't have to pay any tax on the growth, which is great. The challenge you're at now you're 66 and you're thinking, I got a bunch of money in IRAs I'm going to be forced to take withdrawals on. That's going to be taxable income. I don't really need the income off this. So You're probably not going to take any income. You're thinking at age 70, you don't really need it. You're probably not going to take the income. The challenge with these, if you take out a withdrawal yourself, the way it's taxed is you got to, all your first withdrawals is interest out first, principal second. So you start taking money out, it's all taxable to you.
And you have other.
And if you die, there's no step up in basis like there is in other assets. This gain is going to be taxable to your either you or your heirs as ordinary income.
And you have other choices. You can annuitize it over a 10-year period or a 15-year period. Are your children, do you think your children are in a lower income tax bracket than you, the same or much higher? Whoever the beneficiaries, how many beneficiaries are there on the annuity?
Well, I have my two kids. They'll probably be, one is lower. Actually, the other one will probably be higher. So it's hard to say exactly. And so
if this were me, I wouldn't do anything with it.
Yeah.
If I did anything, I'd be maybe looking for a lower cost annuity. I don't know how this is structured, but a really low cost.
I did that too. I did a 1035 exchange from actually was at Hartford and went to Vanguard.
Okay.
Much lower fees.
So I agree with Scott. I would actually just let this thing ride.
Okay.
I would let it ride. And for the rest of the listeners, it sounded good when it was pitched to Robert that
and
you get this tax deferred growth.
Yeah.
But the reality is if you had a low cost tax efficient portfolio.
If this was just an index fund.
You would have gotten to the same place and we wouldn't have to worry about the taxation. You would have paid a little bit of taxes along the way, but it would have come out as capital gains.
And if you die with it, it's
a full step up in basis under current law. So in your situation, because you don't need the money, and because it's probably a wash for your children, one being a low, one being a higher, I would just hold on to it and would look at it as something that
10 years out, 20 years out,
30 years out, just something that the kids will inherit.
Okay.
Another option to think about, you can always annuitize this and rather annuitize it for a fixed dollar amount. You can annuitize it for a fixed unit amount. So what this, the way this works, Robert, is instead of getting a fixed amount of money per month, you get a fixed amount of units of an underlying asset, mainly the subaccounts within the variable annuity. What this could provide is you'd probably have a little lower income today, but it would grow as the underlying investments grew. It would have some growth along there with it. So that's just another option to think about. And we're going to take a quick break. Stick around for more Hanson McLane's Money Matters.
Wondering if you're on track with your financial matters? Call now at 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON.
Want more of Hanson McLane's Money Matters? Visit hansonmclane.com/radio to get the Money Matters podcast.
Welcome back to Hanson McLane's Money Matters. Scott Hanson.
Pat McLane.
Thanks for sticking around as we talk about financials.
Security, yeah. Markets, individuals.
Yeah, and if you want to be part of our program, 1-888-2-HANSON will get you on. 1-888-2-HANSON. Numerically, it's 888-242-6766. And you know, Pat, I saw some, as we've seen more articles on pension costs for cities and counties and municipalities. I think it's going to be interesting to see what happens with some of these older cities and older counties, particularly ones that haven't grown much.
With shrinking tax bases?
Well, or tax because...
Or stable tax bases with increasing costs?
Yes. Because you start looking at what percentage of budget goes to retirement expenditures. I mean, some it's 30%. Goes to pay for retirees, and it's projected to get worse over time. And just like we see from states, people leave states.
People can leave municipalities as well. They can leave cities. They can leave counties. And who are the most likely to leave?
The ones who can.
Which are typically the ones with more money or more assets or more educated.
Yeah, those are the ones that tend to.
Yeah, the ones that pay the taxes.
Yeah, it's an interesting quandary that we've gotten ourselves in.
Well, they're all based on promises that were made years and years ago by people that probably a large portion of them aren't even alive. That's what happened. And it went through.
Well, you didn't bring that up. So most of the increase in pensions for government pensions occurred during the 1990s, the bull market of the 1990s.
Yep.
And it looked like
it was going to run forever. And many of these pension plans were overfunded.
Well, they appeared overfunded because it was such a strong bull market. People forget that things have a tendency to revert back to their mean, revert back to the normal. So when you have outsized returns for a period of time, it's typically followed by a period with under.
Everything reverts to its average.
Yes. But to your point, the people in power, roughly 20 years ago,
mm-hmm. said, look, this is great. We have plenty of money. And if pensions are worried about being underfunded in this marketplace, the longest bull market in recorded history, or close to it.
Yeah.
We've got some real issues.
The next
the municipalities, and we'll see that, there will be pension reform in the public sector. That will happen. It will be political.
So let me ask you this question, Pat, as we're talking about pension stuff, because we have at Hanson McLean, we've worked with a variety of type of clients and retirees, and we have many retirees who are retired and receiving some pension benefits.
Many from the counties, states, municipalities, and we counsel them on the best way to get those pensions. I hold nothing against those people.
No, of course not.
Good for them.
And years ago, you used to be able to buy additional years of service.
So in the state of California.
We have many clients take money from Hanson McLean from their accounts here and went and bought pension additional pension dollars.
Yes.
Through PERS. My question is this. Your opinion on this. Someone's 50 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Someone's 50 and just retired, public safety worker.
Yep. What's the question? Is their pension secure?
What? Not is it secure? My question on your opinion, what risk do you think that person faces?
If they are with a large municipality, city, county.
Much less. Well.
They're with a small one. With a small one, when I say small, let's say less than 150, 200 employees overall.
Yeah, well, we've seen some of those municipalities already go bankrupt.
They're at great risk. Where the rub is not those people that have already retired and started taking the benefit. It's those people that are close to, well, we saw it at companies like AT&T and IBM and the airlines and every other of these large companies that were like, a year or two away from vesting their pensions were the ones that were hurt the most.
Yeah, the guy or gal who's 49.
Yeah, when the pension vests at 50.
Or whatever the pension vests
are. Yeah. But I was bike riding with a friend of mine, and he was telling me his 25-year-old son just got a job with a fire department and what a great pension that he would have when he retired. And because I should have kept my mouth shut because there's not that many people that like to ride with me anyway.
And you said, if it was my son, I wouldn't I'd tell him not to count on a pension.
I wouldn't count on that. And he said, no, it's guaranteed. And I said, yeah, I still wouldn't count on it. So anyway, that was the last time I rode with that friend.
Is that right?
Yes.
I had we're going to get back to the calls here in a minute. 1-888-2-HANSON to join the program. 1-888-2-HANSON. I grew up in Southern California area. And I trimmed trees in college, had a little tree trimming business. And most of my customers were in the Palos Verdes Peninsula. So it's kind of a nice area.
Yeah.
And there's a little town called Rolling Hills where I think the smallest parcel is like 6 acres. They all had to be one-story ranch homes, but they were expensive back then. And that was a long time ago, 30 years
ago. And you lived in this neighborhood?
No, we were on the other side of the tracks.
You worked in this neighborhood?
Some days we did, depending on where my dad parked the trailer. We live close to that. Yeah, I worked in that neighborhood.
Yeah,
thank you.
Where you went,
and I had friends there because we were right on the border there.
Yeah,
it was actually interesting. As a kid, I lived with my mom and stepdad. We had a big ranch house in 5th and 6th grade, and one of my best friends, Carlos, lived. They were migrant farm workers essentially, and they had dirt floor in their house. It was one of my best friends, and I'd feel embarrassed when he came over to our big ranch house. And then I moved down into Torrance with my father.
And then you.
A 900 square foot house. And then I had these friends in Rolling Hills. And within a year, I felt both sides of it. It was really interesting as a child, the social experiment I had. But my point of this, I had a customer.
And I believe there probably is a point to this.
I had
story.
A customer who was the fire chief for Rolling Hills. And he told me, when you finish college, go become a fireman and then go into business. And I said, what do you mean? He says, Scott, most of the time here, we're just sitting around. A lot of guys are just joking around, playing cards. Me, I'm on the phone all the time. It's all business all the time. Unless I'm on a call, I've got my own side business going on all the time. That's what he was telling me. And I thought, I certainly know a lot of firefighters who have side businesses over the years. It had been a great career for a lot of people. I don't know why we're talking about this stuff. Anyway, 1-888-2-HANSON.
Let's go to the calls.
Yeah, let's go talk with Ken. Ken, you're with Hanson McLean.
Hello, thank you.
Hi, Ken.
I call. I'm in a little bit of a different position than what I've heard you guys talk about. I'm 60 years old, disabled. I sold my business, so I have like 9 years worth of income coming. And I'm sitting on a sum of cash that, part of me feels it should be invested and part of me feels it shouldn't be. What would you suggest?
Oh, let's talk about it. So what did you sell your business for? How much money?
It was about $800,000.
Okay. And then you structured a note over 9 years. Is that correct?
For part of it. Yep.
Okay. So how much of
it? And with part of it, I paid off my house.
Okay. So how much money, how much are you going to receive on the note on a monthly basis?
$5,000.
Okay. And then how much money do you have in cash after paying for the house off?
Probably $250,000.
And you already accounted for the taxes that you owe on this, I assume.
Yep, it's all done.
Okay.
Yep.
So the thing we look at, and obviously you are as well, Ken, so 9 years from now, the $5,000 a month stops.
Correct.
What then, right?
Correct.
Okay, and do you have any other assets other than your home and this money and the monthly income?
I mean, I have everything I have paid for, yeah.
Okay, so do you have a 401k or IRA or anything like that?
No.
Okay.
Nope.
And did you apply for Social Security disability? Are you on Social Security disability?
Yes, and that's in addition to the $5,000 a month.
Okay. And are you receiving that currently?
It's in mediation, but yeah.
Okay.
Okay, so it looks good. So you'll receive somewhere between the two about $7,000 a month. Does that sound about right?
Correct.
Okay.
And are you married, Ken?
Yep.
And are you living, what did you earn from your job from this company that when you were running it? What was your monthly income, taxable income to you?
I don't know because I did it and poured it all back in so that when I did sell it, it would be free and clear pretty much.
So do you think you could live comfortably on $7,000 a month?
Yeah, no problem.
Okay, well then that's the answer. So what we're trying...
But the question is what happens in 9 years?
Correct. What we're trying to determine is when do you need this $250,000?
In 9 years.
In 9 years. Yeah.
So
if I'm alive.
Assuming that you're not, even if we assume you're not alive, we assume that your spouse will be alive. So we're managing it for the household.
And how long have you been receiving this $5,000 a month?
4 years.
Okay. And do you find that you're spending everything that's coming through
No. I could still save on top of it.
How much?
Probably a couple $1,000.
Okay. All right. So here's the exercise that one needs to go through, Ken, is really saying, okay, how much can we budget today so that 9 years from now, when this stops and we have to start taking an income from our savings, we can replace that income. And further, frankly, is to allow for some sort of inflation bump along the way. So
does your spouse work outside of the home?
Yes.
And will your spouse be receiving a pension?
No.
Okay.
She has a business. She will be selling that off at some point, probably.
Okay.
What is your main concern?
Well, back in 2008, like everybody else, I lost half of what I had invested. And so I'm not in a real eager mood to get real excited about taking this and putting it in something and lose half of it.
And
I'd rather be safe and gain less.
Got it. And how did you respond in 2008? Did you sell your investments and then go to cash or?
I did. Okay. And invested into my business.
Okay.
Got it. Well, so it's not an all or nothing thing, right, Ken? So obviously at age 60, just selling a business, having some disability, taking your proceeds from the sale of your business and throwing it in the stock market would be foolish. But
thank you.
Yeah, no, I mean,
it would absolutely be. It would be.
You called up and said you've put it all in the stock market, would be, I was going to say pulling our hair out, but I don't have much left to pull.
But it wouldn't be that bad of an idea to treat this much like large pension funds treat their assets and look at a time frame and when you expect to take income from this and how much income you would expect to take. So I would put this in a tax efficient portfolio. Actually, I would probably do some a little bit more advanced planning than that. I'd probably try to incorporate your wife's business into it. Does she have any employees?
Yes, she does.
Okay. I would try to possibly incorporate some benefits, tax benefits through your wife's business in this.
You would really benefit from sitting down with a certified financial planner, somebody who can help walk each step of this. And really just thinking about this, as Pat says, it's really incorporating what's happening with your spouse as well. But it's figuring out the right plan of how much of the $5,000 a month that's coming in from this sale can you spend, and how much should that really be set aside for the future? Then what's the proper investment mix for the $250?
And the proper investment mix, if I was to give it right off the phone, the little I know about you, would probably be a moderate portfolio, or moderate to conservative portfolio.
Yeah, so something where you've got a variety of different type of holdings, where you have some would be remain in cash, but you'd also have some in some different types of fixed income investments, some stock, but a minority of the portfolio. Because remember, you've got 9 years, but even at 9 years, you'll start taking an income. So it really needs to last much longer than that. It's not an all or nothing by any means.
Yes.
But I think you've been a year now. It sounds like it's been sitting in cash. You know, this isn't the right plan long term. So I think by making this phone call, it's definitely the right starting point. I think your next step is really sitting down with a certified financial planner.
And I'll give you an example. What we should probably be looking at is to see if your wife, if she has a lot of employees, maybe a 401k or a SEP IRA is not appropriate, but maybe a Roth contribution into an IRA using some of your wife's earned income is appropriate. And that way you're taking some
I
of those
put
dollars.
Money in a Roth?
If your wife's working.
Yep.
You may be able to, yeah. You might also say that it might, like as Pat's saying, it might be an opportunity to really fund
What's called a self Unit K or a self-employed 401k or a SEP IRA, just depending upon what her business looks like, how many employees she has, what her income is.
Right. Okay.
But from the little I know about you right now, those are the questions I would ask. But at the end of the day, the question you asked us was, what is the appropriate mix? And I would think it was moderate to moderate conservative for this.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And do you have an opinion on commercial bridge loans that you hear them doing?
Oh, you mean buying commercial bridge loans?
Yep.
Oh, you mean the ads?
What?
So the ads you hear on the radio?
Yeah.
I have an opinion.
Yeah, that's what I want to hear.
Oh, you want to hear the opinion?
I'm just curious if you had one. He doesn't really want to know what your opinion is.
I don't know
is.
If I should share it on the radio. It's not good. It's a terrible.
Yes, you.
It's a this for the average investors. There's scams out there that you worry about. One is viaticals. The other are non-traded limited partnerships. The other are bridge loans, where you're lending to a third party through some sort of a magical interface.
What kind of returns are they stating you can get?
6%.
Okay.
Yeah.
How much could you borrow? What would you pay if you borrowed from the bank today?
How much would you, if you went and got a loan on
your... Well, I know. That's why it doesn't seem right.
Of course.
Yep. There you go.
If they're going to pay you, you think they've got to pay the advertising, their whole business structure, I mean, and then they're paying you 6%, their cost of money has got to be much greater.
And did they use the word guarantee?
Yes.
Okay,
put your name on on the real estate. Yeah.
So I remember, you know, it's funny, Ken, I remember a couple years ago, I had a client of mine, been a client for many years. A good friend of his approached him on something like this. The company looked great. He says, Scott, I'm thinking of taking a portion of my IRA and investing in this. Can you do some research on it? I said, happy to do so. I'd love to. So dug into this a little more. And it didn't take me very long by searching around. And I found that the company had existed in another format before under a different name, and it went through a bankruptcy restructure. And I went back, I said, you realize that it was 9 years ago, whatever it was, this company went into a bankruptcy. The same person leading it had already went through a bankruptcy, defaulted on their creditors before, and you want to loan this guy money?
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. So you want to stay away from anything that's not traded, and those are not traded in a secondary market, so you don't know the price. You want to stay away from anything that's not traded or not priced.
Well, let's switch gears now, and we're going to move to real advice. This is a time in our program where we talk to a financial advisor and hear about their experience with a client. Remember that the experience that they have may not be the type of experience that you would have and would be different. So this is not meant as any sort of client endorsement whatsoever. But today we've got on the program Alex Scott. Alex is a certified financial planner. He's out of our Cincinnati, Ohio office, part of Simply Money, which is part of Hanson McLean. And Alex has been a financial advisor for more than 10 years. And Alex, thanks for being part of Hanson McLean's Money Matters today.
Yeah, sure. It's great to be joining you today.
Yeah, thanks for taking the time. So tell us a situation you have with a client.
Yeah, so I think this example really checks off a few of the boxes of some of the reasons on why people either seek out help or need assistance with their financial situation. So every situation is a little different, but we tend to see some common themes that kind of create a trigger for them to seek out help. So in this case, my client was in her early 60s, and one of those triggers a lot of times is going to be a life change. So that could be anything from retirement, death of a spouse, divorce. In her case, near retirement, so that was a life change that was on the horizon. But the other thing for her was an unexpected divorce. Happened just about a year and a half ago.
Well, I tell you, Alex, and those... if you look at the statistics of gray divorce, it's about double now what it was 30 years ago. People at this stage in life, and it can be devastating on one's financial and retirement plans.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's obviously life changing as far as you know what the plans were in retirement.
Yes,
your spouse of years, and suddenly you find yourself without that spouse. But
so this lady came to you and. She was going to retire, but then all of a sudden it's both retirement and a divorce, correct?
Correct, correct. And so the other common theme that we see a lot is in like a lot of marriages or relationships, you all kind of divide, you know, different tasks or different things you're going to do. So you do the grocery shopping and I shop for the clothes for the kids and this thing, this and that. So in this case, she was kind of the day-to-day financial handling of things. So paying the bills and make sure this is done and that's done. But then the big picture and the kind of investment side and financial planning side was a little more things that her husband handled.
Which is interesting, Alex. And that is so common still. I don't think it'll be, I've been doing this for almost 30 years and it's still very common today at someone age 60. You wonder how much difference is going to be another 10 or 20 years.
It's exactly how it works in my house.
Well, you're the financial advisor. Come on.
And I married an accountant, so okay, it makes sense for her to pay the bills.
I would be really concerned, Pat, if you told me that.
Well, no, that's a good point. That is a good point. So where did we go with this then?
So we go from there. So we kind of move into a lot of times I'll relate financial planning to an orchestra because we've got all these moving parts for most people in their financial lives. So you've got investments and taxes and estate planning and risk management, retirement income planning. So it's one of the main responsibilities for that planner to try and put all this together and make all those pieces work together well. But it's really hard to do that without the sheet music, right? So the very first step for her was essentially what are we working with and what does she have and help her understand her financial situation kind of once all the dust settles. Where she is. And in this case, it was a little more complex because there were some other moving parts. Her husband was ownership in a privately held company, so there was privately held stock and employee stock option plans, another piece of real estate beyond their primary residence. So there was a lot to nail down just to answer that question alone. So that was really the first step of where am I and what am I working with?
And based upon the assets you've described, I'm under the impression that she probably was okay financially?
Yes. And I think just yes, you could look at the asset picture. And if we're going to split this 50-50, I think most people would look at that and say, oh, yeah, she's going to be fine. But I think until you go through the exercise and you see it on paper.
Yeah, and where's the monthly income coming from?
Yeah.
And how can I be certain that it's going to be there next month and a year from now and 20 years from now?
And you're going through a stage, whether you instigated the divorce or not, you're still going through an emotional stage, and now you compound it with retirement. So at the end of this, was she able to retire comfortably?
Yes, absolutely. So the next step, like you said, was to answer that million-dollar question, will I be okay? You know, we go through that process of here's where you are. Let's make some reasonable assumptions going forward. Let's look at some tax implementation strategies, withdrawal strategies, Social Security planning. So that starts to become, you know, part of where we're trying to optimize what she has. So that answers the first question. And then really the fun part or the final step is, okay, I know I'm going to be okay with the basic stuff. Now what are the possibilities? You know, here's the top three things I really want to do in retirement, and how many of those or all of those possible as well. So
yeah.
So that's where you kind of move beyond the basic and you kind of move into some of the fun stuff and the wish list of things. And yeah, she's certainly well on her way of marking a few of those off her list as well. So
well, we appreciate that, Alex. Thanks for being on the show.
Thanks for taking some time to join Hanson McLean's Money Matters. Appreciate it, Alex. You know, it's interesting, Pat. We've both experienced this over the years as financial. Sometimes you see a divorce happen, and from a financial standpoint, they're both okay.
Yes.
Retirement. Sometimes it's older than 62. Other times, which has been challenging, and I know you've experienced as I have as well, someone maybe in the late 50s, early 60s.
Where it is devastating.
Financially.
Oftentimes we see this as well, Scott, is where someone will come in and they'll want to split the assets 50-50. And I've heard people say, well, I'm going to take the IRA and they're going to take the house. And since the IRA is worth $500,000 and the house is worth $500,000,
we're going to call it a day.
We're going to call it a day. You couldn't get more wrong. And I've seen attorneys actually sign off on these.
Yes.
But in order to do it correctly, you have to take everything into an after-tax or liquidation value in order to buy the
asset. What's the realistic taxation of this IRA?
Yeah, which is 30%. And on a home, what is it? Zero.
Yeah.
So it's not as easy as just splitting the assets.
Well, unfortunately, we are out of time. We're here every week at the same time. Go to HansonMcLean.com for more information on this or to sign up for our podcast. We'll see you next week. This has been Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
This program has been brought to you by Hanson McLean Advisors, a registered investment advisory firm. Any ideas presented during this program are not intended to provide specific financial advice, and you should consult your own financial advisor, tax consultant, or estate planning attorney to conduct your own due diligence.
What matters most to you? Probably family and friends, but what else? When you're in your 20s, it's one thing. Your 30s and 40s, another. When your 50s creep in, you're older and wiser, but the sand in the hourglass of your asset accumulation stage has shifted. Right now, you're listening to Scott Hanson and Pat McLean. Sure, they've been hosting Money Matters for 20 years, but they've been CEOs of Hanson McLean Advisors for longer than that. If you're over 50 and you've been saving for retirement, you're probably wondering how your preparation stacks up. Here's what you should do. Go to HansonMcLean.com and either schedule a free consultation with one of our credentialed advisors, or if you're not quite ready for that, maybe take a look at some of the helpful materials in our learning library. You'll see tutorials, podcasts, and articles on things like Social Security, retirement planning, investments, and a whole slew of other things that can help you retire well. Over 50 and starting to see retirement up ahead? Make sure you do it right. We can help. Go to HansonMcLean.com today.